Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
So we kick off tonight's Open House, our final Ask Anything segment for the year with Pastor Dale Stevenson from the Crossway Church in Melbourne. This has been a very popular segment. Dale has put himself up there for any and all questions to anyone who'd listen, people with faith, but also people without faith. His challenge is ask anything about that faith. So over to you, ask anything, open to all comers. We're putting Dale to the test again. Give us a call on 1300 40 2020. If the question you've always wondered about the Christian faith or the Bible, faith generally, tonight's your night. Fire away, 1300 40 2020. Dale Stevenson, welcome back. Final time for the year, sadly.
Yes, g'day, Lee. How are you? And that was quite the announcement you made just a little minute ago. It's been delightful working with you.
It's been an absolute treat working with you too, Dale. This has been a very significant and popular segment. So thank you very much indeed for putting yourself up for it. Let's kick off. First question tonight. Dale, can you explain the difference between what an atheist believes and what a Christian believes? Over to you.
Okay, well, the basic conviction of an atheist is that there is no God. In contrast to an agnostic who is uncertain as to whether there is a God, and a Christian who believes that there is a God who has revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ. Now, it's not oftentimes you describe what someone believes but what they don't believe, but that's actually kind of the core of what it means to be an atheist. So an atheist might believe many and diverse things, but the one thing that sets them apart and defines them as an atheist is the fact that they do not believe, and for many of them, with a very sincere conviction, They've kind of looked at the issues, they've sought to work it through, and the conclusion they have drawn is that there is no God. It's probably worth me saying at this point in time, up until the age of 19, I was an atheist, and that conviction had grown and developed within me until I began to read the Bible and I was exposed to Jesus and to Christians, and I became convinced, and therefore I believed. I didn't take a blind step of faith, but I actually looked into it. I had 100 questions and thoughts against God and the potential existence of God, but I became convinced, and Jesus really won both my heart and my mind. And so that's probably the core distinction and difference between someone who would say that they're an atheist and someone who would say that they are a Christian.
Okay, good answer. Can I ask you personally, if you're a committed atheist, what got you interested in reading the Bible? How did that happen?
It was a friend, and so frequently this is the case. A gentleman by the name of Mike came into my world, and he became my friend, and I just asked him one Monday morning, "What did you do over the weekend, Mike?" And he told me in somewhat glowing terms about how he'd been to some kind of youth group, and he told me about church, and I remember I actually had a kind of a visceral response. And I just, in quite kind of shock and awe tactics, I said, "Don't ever tell me anything about that again." My language was fairly colourful. Wow. And he said to me, he said, "Dale," he said, "you're a smart guy, and you wouldn't have a strong opinion about a political party or a culture or an individual that you knew nothing about." And then he eyeballed me and he said, "Dale," he said, "why are you prepared to stake your eternal destiny on your opinion of Jesus, and you don't even know anything about him? Why don't you read the Bible and then you'll know what you don't believe?"
Wow.
It was just the best one-liner.
What a moment.
And what I heard internally was that I was an ignorant bigot, and even though he never used the words, and I said, "Okay, I'll read it." And so I embarked on a year and a half of reading the Bible, quizzing Christians. I actually started going to church with him, and so starting from a very antagonistic and a very negative position, and one by one, all of my protests and all of my questions were either knocked over or responded to, and so my mind was satisfied and my heart was won, and I put my trust in Jesus.
The Lord works in mysterious ways, because now here you are heading up the great Crossway Church in Melbourne. How funny. Could I add one more term to that first question? So we dealt with atheist, Christian. What's an agnostic? What's the difference between, say, an atheist and an agnostic?
Okay, an atheist is convinced that there is no God. An agnostic is uncertain whether there is a God.
Yes.
And or they might even say it's not possible to know whether there is and isn't a God. Gnosis is knowledge, a little Greek word there. A And so agnostic is no knowledge. So it's a statement of uncertainty, or that it's not possible to know. And that's kind of the agnostic position. It's kind of I don't know, or I don't think it's knowable.
Okay. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Dale Stevenson anything. 1-300-40-2020 is the number, or if you want to post a question on Facebook, head to our Open House Community Facebook page. Here's a question from a listener who didn't want to go on air, Dale.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who has an absent father, and when he is suicidal in despair, I try to reassure him that his father in heaven loves him. Just a few days ago, it dawned on me that how can he connect to a God as a father figure when he has limited experience of a father, and it's in a negative way? He yearns for an unknown. How does the church connect a father who's God with these non-earthly father children?
Yeah, what a
and they often have a tough experience with dads.
Oh, yeah. A fantastic question, and a very real question. And can I just kind of do a self-declare here that my dad moved interstate when my parents divorced and got married and fathered some other kids. I saw him for about 6 weeks between the age of 14 and 24, and I love my father. And but, you know, we kind of went through some of the tough yards on all of that domain. In reality, even the fact that we feel the pain of an absent father, or for some people it can be like a negligent father or an abusive father,
yes,
even the fact that we feel the pain speaks of a yearning for something different to that. So there actually is a desire for a positive father figure. And so for the person who's saying, you know, their friend is having suicidal thoughts, and I'm sure, Lee, you'll have the Lifeline number at your fingertips.
Yes.
We can therefore speak in contrast. I made mention of this. I was actually speaking at church tonight. You know, there was that event where when Jesus got baptized, and it said there was a voice from heaven, and you get these powerful and affirming words: "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And I actually challenged the congregation and said, "Have you ever experienced what it is for God to affirm you and to speak positive words over you, as He did over Jesus? You know, have you experienced it from others? Because, you know, we can kind of position God with all these things." And for many people, you know, they haven't experienced that from their earthly parents, and so they kind of struggle to think, what would it be like for God to actually say, "You are my son," or "You are my daughter, and I love you, and I am so proud of you." And so when we're dealing with a friend who has had only negative experiences of a father, and it's just pushing them right to the edge where they're uncertain about their future, we can speak by way of contrast, that they actually do have a loving God who actually does use fatherly language. Mind you, there is also a metaphor in the scriptures that is female type language as well. But that there is a Father God who loves and who cares, and the fact that someone's had a negative experience themselves, that doesn't have to negatively position God, because He's in by way of contrast.
Yeah, what a great answer. Okay, next question. Where do you draw the line as a Christian when trying to be accepting of people but not encouraging their ways and supposedly unchristian lifestyle choices? It's a good question, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's an excellent question. And a lot of Christians really kind of stumble on this one, and they can start to feel a little bit like they're the moral police. And it's a terrible kind of way to position ourselves. And no one likes to have the moral police around. No one particularly wants friends who's being the moral police for them either. And what frequently a Christian is attempting to do is take what life looks like under the beautiful and loving reign of Jesus and apply it into a friend situation who doesn't necessarily want to be under the loving reign of Jesus in their lives. And therefore, if a Christian's saying, "Look, you know, I don't think you should be getting drunk, or I don't think you should be having sex before you're married," and or et cetera, et cetera, there's a plethora of things that might be distinctives of Christian morality. And the core issue in this deal is, what does it look like to love a person who is different from you? And Jesus had much to say about that. He said, you know, if you only love those who love you, you're no different from anyone else, He said. And so this potent force of actually loving a person who's different from us. And Christians can get it a little mixed up whereby they feel if I love the person, it looks like ipso facto I'm affirming whatever lifestyle choices they might be making. The Christian might not want to be affirming those choices, but that is a confused perspective. Love them generously. In fact, by loving them generously, it sometimes does open the door to allow us to speak into a person's life in kind of a trusting and safe environment. But if a person feels like you're leading by being the moral police, they'll just slam the door on that because no one wants the moral police hanging around.
Understandably, yes. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Dale anything. Dale Stevenson from Melbourne Crossway Church, 1300 40 2020 is our number. A fellow Melbournean has called in. Ben is on the phone. Ben, here's Dale. What's your question?
Hey, I'm Dale. I've got a mate of mine. He's an extraordinarily intelligent person, and he will find any form of scientific reason to deny Christ. How do I reach a guy like that? Any ideas?
Yeah. No, that's a great question, Ben. And frequently people will hide behind scientific evidence, attempting to suggest that all of the science is leaning in one direction. Now, in reality, there are multiple, and I mean multiple, and it's, in fact, I remember doing a presentation on how Christian Europe was the womb that gave birth to modern scientific thought, and how the various fathers of the various scientific disciplines were all Christians because they believed that there was an orderly God that he should have put order into creation and that they should be able to find that order, and that gave birth to modern science.
You'll love hearing Rodney Stark, who's our next guest on Open House, on that very issue, actually.
There you go. Well, watch this space.
Yeah.
So in reality, even current international scientific leaders. Let me put it this way: we can feel a little bit like, because Richard Dawkins is such a loud voice, we can feel like, oh, that's the voice of the scientific community. But it's actually not the case. There are many leading international scientists who are Christians and who do not have a contradiction between their science and their Christian faith. So these things, science is actually neutral. It sits in the middle. It's a pursuit of truth. Some people will look at science, and which I did, and I became convinced of the existence of God. Others will look at that and will become convinced that there is no God. So it's not that science per se is anti-Christian. Science is neutral. Then the individual brings their perspectives, their own biases, as they look at the evidence. Personally, I think when we look at the evidence, there is enormous evidence to suggest that there is a God there, but that's a longer answer.
Ben, how do you feel about that kind of answer?
Well, that's kind of answer I probably expected. When I look at science, like I look at science myself, I'm very much into the different ways and ins and outs of the universe. And I often ask myself, you know, is it logical for God to only put life on one planet in this massive universe? But it's not for me to decide what God wants to do with the universe. That's his business.
Yes, yeah.
But
Ben, can I just jump in with a couple of thoughts then that might be helpful if we're going to push this one just slightly further down the line? Just I think these couple of simple thoughts are quite helpful. Science these days does not believe that matter is eternal. Science is drawing the conclusion, this is the general academic thought, that matter actually had a beginning rather than it being eternal. We therefore have to ask ourselves, because we see the effect. We've gone from no matter to matter, so we see the effect. What was the cause? And we have to say, why did an eternity pass prior to matter coming into being, if indeed it does have a beginning? And if it doesn't have a beginning, why did it take an eternity until now to evolve to the level it has? So we've gone from nothing to something, and then we've gone from chaos to order. And so I have to say, what is big enough and powerful enough to take us from nothing to something and then from chaos to order? And for me, when you look at one strand of DNA, there's enough cells in our body, if we counted a billion a second, it would take us 3 million years to count how many cells are in our body. Inside every one of those cells is a nucleus that has our DNA in it. you can unfold every one of those strands of DNA, and it would be 1.8 metres long. That means there's enough DNA in you, Ben, to wrap the sun around 260 times. It's like putting 48 kilometres of fishing line inside a cherry pip. It's not just stuffed in there. Fold it one way, it becomes a skin cell. Fold it another way, it becomes a toe. Fold another way, it becomes a liver. Fold another way, it becomes part of the heart. And it differentiates as it multiplies. And now this, you have to say, when even just, that's really simple thought. Something to nothing, chaos to order. Does that suggest there's some power and intelligence behind it? I say yes.
Ben, thanks very much indeed for your call, and thank you, Dale, for your great segment, and it's been an absolute treat speaking with you and delving into your great wisdom. Thank you so much indeed, mate.
Good on you, Lee. It's been an absolute delight, and I wish you all of God's best as you embark onto your future.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.